Hello and welcome to Kuskany Marsh Nature Reserve in County Cork in the southwest of Ireland for our annual live broadcast of the Dawn Chorus. It's 4 a.m. Irish summer time and it's still rather quiet here, not to mention very dark. I can just about see the microphone. Where would you be without a red light? All of us here at RTE are immensely proud and privileged to be hosting this unique event again after what has been an horrendous period for people across Ireland and the world. We've all been tested to our very limits. Some have fared better than others, and as we embark on our melodious odyssey this morning, I want you to know that our thoughts are with each and every one of you. The past year has been one in which interest in nature has reached new heights, it's fair to say. The COVID-19 pandemic appears to have led to a greater appreciation of our flora and fauna, and in particular, our birds. The joy and optimism engendered by birdsong has been discovered by many for the first time, and it has become a crucial source of comfort and continuity during some pretty bleak times. So we're delighted that you can be with us for our Dawn Chorus this morning, and wherever you happen to be listening in the world right now, we want to say good morning. We hope that for the next 3 hours, you can stay with us as the first glimmer of light appears in the sky and the birds wake up and break into song. This is, after all, what our brief sojourn into the avian world is all about today, the phenomenon of early morning birdsong, something that has been happening without pause since birds first appeared on the Earth some 150 million years ago. To quote our own Dr. Richard Collins, the dawn chorus never ceases. It moves like a great wave across the face of the Earth. At this moment, somewhere in the world, the birds are waking up and bursting into song. Later, we'll bring you a unique performance by our own avian orchestra here in County Cork. We'll also be checking in with Richard Collins and the rest of the Mooney Goes Wild team, Éinín Ealaíne, Terry Flanagan and Eric Dempsey, at their respective homes across Ireland. Together, we'll ask why the birds sing and why so early in the morning. What do they get out of it? Why do they make such complex vocalizations in the first place? We'll address all of these questions and more as best we can before settling down, relaxing and enjoying nature's symphony, the Dawn Chorus. Now, at this point, I want to wish a very warm welcome to listeners across Europe and beyond who are tuned into this broadcast, courtesy of our colleagues in the European Broadcasting Union. And in particular, I want to say good morning to listeners in Northern Ireland, in Scotland, in Wales, in Cornwall, on the Isle of Man, and in Brittany, our Celtic cousins joining us for this Celtic-themed Dawn Chorus.
Good morning from Camaret-sur-Mer in Brittany in France. We are Serge and Nicole Kerguet, and we are very nice to join our Celtic cousins on RTE Radio 1 on Iron for the Dawn Chorus.
Merci, Nicole and Serge Kerguet in Brittany in France. We also want to hear from you this morning when the birds start singing where you live. What you got to do is get your mobile phone ready and lodge this Dawn Chorus designated WhatsApp number into it. It's 00353 87 708 7031. Now, it doesn't matter if you're in Dublin or Durban, it will work regardless. So 00 is the international code, 353-87-708-7031. And when the birds are singing where you live, just simply press record, tell us your name, where you are, and point your mobile phone towards the birds. And then release the record button, and that will be sent directly to RTE. And your Dawn Chorus will be part of our Dawn Chorus. If you want a step-by-step guide to how to WhatsApp your audio to us, visit our website, which is rte.ie/Mooney. That number again, 00353 87 708 7031. Have you got it? You have indeed. Okay, as I said, I'm in Kuskany Marsh Nature Reserve in Cove in County Cork, and I'm joined by Niall Hatch, Development Officer with Birdwatch Ireland, and our man in Cork, ornithologist and naturalist Jim Wilson. Now, Jim, we should begin by saying exactly what Kuskany Marsh is and where we are, and you're the local guy, so tell us all about it, please.
Yes, Derek. Well, we're in the heart of Cork Harbour. We're in Birdwatch Ireland's Kuskany Marsh Nature Reserve. And it's a perfect spot for the Dawn Corps broadcast. That's why you keep coming back, thankfully, because we've got so many habitats in such a small area. So it means we've got a wide variety of
birds,
yeah, coming there. No, I mean, this didn't happen overnight. You know, the reserve is owned by the bird family.
That's their name.
That's their actual name. Andrew, David and Heather.
Hello to
and
them.
Then the Ronan family are the other owners. And I have to give a special mention tonight to Wanda Ronan, who's the owner. She will be 100 on the 14th of May.
Well, happy birthday, Wanda Ronan, on the 14th of May.
And she's been a huge supporter. So have to mention those, because without them,
problem.
We wouldn't have
we
the reserve.
We couldn't do it, yeah.
And then small group of us managed and keep the place going. People of Cove, which is only just in the road, really love it. And it's in their hearts. So the Dawn Corps is coming from here. Is just an annual event that we have and that we really look forward to. And hopefully during the night, as things start picking up, you'll notice it'll change from what it's like now,
which is very quiet.
And if you listen for a second,
can't hear anything.
Exactly, Derek. There's nothing to hear at the moment. But this is so, I always find it so incredible every year. Yeah. We come out, we set up, and it's deathly silence.
Yeah, we're always afraid.
Yeah, I mean, you can feel the hum, all right, of the harbour. Something like, we crossed the water from us here. Beautiful half moon coming up tonight. It was stunning. Over
yeah.
I had a power station, and next to that is the Whitegate refinery. So there's a little hum from that, because obviously, even though we're in strange times with COVID,
yeah,
some people are still working, yeah. And I'm sure they will be listening tonight. They listen every. We get all sorts of people who have to work through the night to
and
keep the country
going. And we
want
to hear from them, as the reason I've given out the number. Now there are 450 birds on the Irish bird list, thereabouts.
Yeah.
Now, how many are here in Kuskany Marsh? Species, not numbers of actual birds.
Yeah, the last count we've had for Kuskany is just over 200.
That's just quite high.
Yeah, no, that's including single records going back decades.
Okay.
You know, I did a quick tot as well. Over the years, we've had over 40 different species of bird contribute, we'll say, to the Dawn Chorus. Not all of them would be, to our ears, the most proficient of singers.
Okay, so it's just like the Eurovision Song Contest.
No, that's bold. That's bold.
But that's true.
But true. But you are right. But you are right, Derek. Yeah, so, I mean, could you imagine that? We've recorded the sounds of over 40 different species.
Yeah.
I mean, in the average garden, in a suburban garden, anywhere in Ireland, you could pick up anything between 10 and 20 if you actually spend your time listening, and there's birds singing quietly in the background. Then you have the ones like the wren, which you're all going to get to know by the end of this broadcast, because it's the one, I refer to it as the opera singer, because it will blast out a sound for such a tiny bird that it'll render the others sort of paling into insignificance. So we're hoping this morning that those wrens might give it a break now and again, so that we can hear all the other members of the Dawn Chorus down
here. Oh, come on. You said to me the other day when I said, is there anything we can do about the wren? You pretty much said to me, build a bridge, Derek, and get over it. That the wren is going to sing all over that the wren hugs its territory when it's singing.
Absolutely. And what's more, it's one of our most common countryside birds in Ireland.
Mm.
So, like, you know, you throw a stick and you probably hit one. Now, we're not telling people to go off and do that, but you will find them almost everywhere. And for their size, we have one in the garden actually nesting in one of our nest boxes. And I was, after you said that to me during the week, is there any way we can position the mic so that the wrens aren't quite hogging the show? And I kind of said, well, actually, I was thinking to myself, I was in the garden, and this wren like was like, you know, 100 feet away, you know, 30 meters. And it was just blasting us out of it. I said, and I was thinking to myself, nah.
It's always the small guys.
You're not going to get wrong. Yeah, they make up for that.
Anyway, speaking of the birds, we are not alone. I'm with Jim Wilson and Niall Hatch, but we have two sound engineers here with us, Damien Gavigan and Mick McLaughlin. So they have positioned the microphones. They've been here all day getting ready. So can you take us through the various habitats? Because you said this is the perfect place for our microphones because of the mixed habitats here.
Yeah. I mean, we've been very lucky with Mick and Damien. They know the ropes. They know exactly where to put the mics at this stage so that we get the broadest range of species. And, you know, they worked tirelessly during the day and getting everything ready for us here tonight. So, a big shout out to Mick and Damien for that. So we'll just quickly go through the habitats. As I mentioned already, listen carefully, because the chances are you're not going to hear anything.
Okay.
So here we go. We'll start with the deciduous woodland.
Nada.
Nada at the moment. All tucked up, asleep in bed. We'll try now the coniferous woodland.
Nope.
Absolutely nada. Now we'll try the lake. It's technically a lagoon. There's reed beds all around it and the harbour is off in the distance.
You can hear that distant hum all right.
You can.
But no birds. Oh, something.
Yes, that was a mallard.
It was a mallard.
The mallards have been vocal tonight.
Was it male or female, Jim?
It was probably male, to be frankly honest. It was probably male.
Yourself,
yeah, the females are quieter. The males are the ones that laugh at you. We'll hear that later.
And in fact, let's point out to people that when you hear these birds sing in the early hours of the morning, really between probably 5:30 and 6:30, when it really gets going, it really is only the males that perform in the dawn chorus.
Almost always. There are, like everything in nature, there's a couple of exceptions, but down here it'll be the men that'll be out there proclaiming their territory, looking for a mate and all that. And then we've got a stream.
A stream. You can hear the little trickle of the water there?
You can.
But still no birds.
No,
Would there be any possibility? No, it's a stream. We're not going to get a dipper in there.
No, it's more like a little babbling brook,
okay.
Really. And some years we hadn't enough water in it. We were trying to find a spot where it would make a little bit of noise. Anyway, and finally we have the farmland. The whole area is surrounded by farmland.
Now, the farmland is where we're going to get our rooks.
Absolutely. There's a rookery.
Our crows.
Yeah. There's a rookery not far from here. And once dawn comes, it becomes a very noisy place, the rookery. And it's a beautiful sound. It's a characteristic sound of the countryside. So hoping, and a few other birds, pheasant, and you never know what else.
All right, Jim, thank you very much indeed. We'll come back to you momentarily. And I'm also with Niall Hatch, who's the Development Officer with Birdwatch Ireland. But he's also a regular panellist, as is Jim, on Mooney Goes Wild on RTÉ Radio 1. Now, Niall, today we have themed this programme the Celtic Dawn Chorus. I mentioned the rooks, the crows there. Is there such a thing as a Celtic bird? And if so, what is it?
Well, if I was to vote, I would say that the Celtic bird, the quintessential one, would be the chough, which is a fantastic bird, one of my favourites. It's a member of the crow family, and I know a lot of people don't like crows. I love them, but I know a lot of people don't. But don't be put off them, because the chough is a superb bird. It's absolutely magnificent. It's a bird that really is just found in northwestern Europe in the Celtic regions. That's where it's found. So we have them on the south and the west coast of Ireland. There's a small population on the coast of County Antrim in Northern Ireland as well. They're in western Scotland in a few small areas. They're on the coast of Wales. They're on the Isle of Man. They're in Cornwall. In fact, it's the national bird of Cornwall.
It's on the coat of arms, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
And there's also a colony of them in Brittany. And in this region of the world, that's really the only place you find them. As you go further south into Europe, you do have them in Iberia, where they tend to be inland birds in the mountainous regions. In southern Europe, you get them in parts of the Alps, along with the Alpine chough. You have them there as well. And then on the Canary Islands, the island of La Palma, there's a big population of them there. It's the only of the seven Canary Islands where you find the species, and it's their local or national bird for that island as well. Then as you go across Asia, you find them through China, well inland. So it's really just this phenomenon of them being coastal birds is in this Celtic region. So that's really fascinating. Just to describe them, they're a sort of a black-bodied crow, as you might expect for most crow species, but they're different to the others. They have a long, down-curved red beak, and they have red legs as well. So the Irish name for them is called Costarrig, which means red-legged jackdaw. It's a very apt name. And in many of the other Celtic languages, it's similar. It's red-legged crow, red-legged jackdaw. And in Cornish, actually, is a reference again to the name, like it's a chough kind of name. It means the call of the bird. So that's the sound that it makes. It's a remarkable bird. And it's the one that I would think is most quintessentially Celtic. It's the one that I associate most with the Celtic languages.
Yeah, I see that in Cornwall, the last breeding pair was recorded in 1947. And then in 2002, a breeding pair turned up, believed to be from Ireland or British stock. I'm not too sure whether you know the answer to that or not. But one of the nationalists, the prominent nationalists in Cornwall, said that with the reemergence of the chough, will come the emergence of a new nation or something like that.
They're
looking for independence, you know.
It has become a national symbol there, and it's very closely associated with King Arthur and Arthurian legend.
Yes.
And of course, that's a very important figure in Cornwall in mythology and in history or in legend. And again, yes, there's this idea. I suppose the chough, it used to be a much more common bird across Ireland and Britain and other parts of Europe, got pushed to the fringes. And in many ways, people have seen a parallel with Celtic culture and with Celtic languages being pushed to the fringes. and now having something of a resurgence. But it is quite remarkable the way the choughs occur in the areas where the Celtic languages, where they're spoken, is the strongest.
Well, explain why it was pushed to the fringes. So if you think of the Celts, they were pushed to the fringes by the Anglo-Saxons.
By the Romans initially, indeed, and then by the Germanic tribes, the Slavic tribes, absolutely.
And the chough the same way because of farming practices? It moved out to the coast?
It is.
So it's
mainly through farming practices. Obviously, as woodlands were felled and as agriculture became more intensive, this gave an opportunity for other crow species to become more common. So a lot of people will be very familiar with birds like the rook, which we're going to hear later, the jackdaw, the magpie, and also, depending on where you're listening to us, the hooded crow, like we have here in Ireland and in parts of Western Scotland, or the carrion crow, which is in much of the rest of Western Europe, including most of Britain. And they are able to outcompete the chough. The chough isn't able to compete so well with them in a general open habitat or farmland, but what they can do is they can live around the fringes. They can be the coastal areas, and that means that they can eke out an existence at the sea cliffs and on the beaches. So that's where they live.
Okay, well, let's say hello now to Richard Collins, who's in Malahide. Richard, good morning to you.
Good morning, Derek. How are you?
You're at your home in Malahide there. You're looking at the coast. Well, you can probably see very little. It's dark there too. It's very dark here. The birds are asleep. We're waiting for them to wake up and still quiet, Richard. You told me one time that you were in Borneo and this guy brought you right up to a sleeping bird. Now, yes. Myself, Niall, Richard and all the gang that are here went walking looking for sleeping birds. We wouldn't find them. And if we got close to them, they'd be gone. Because I'm told that some birds sleep with one eye open. Can you talk to me about birds and sleep and what's going on?
Well, birds and sleep, Derek, very interesting. The incident you referred to, I think I mentioned it to you a long time ago. In Borneo, a fella used to take us out into the jungle at night, a ranger fella, and looking for snakes and things that move around and are nocturnal. And we would come to a branch, and perched on the branch would be a bird or two. And you could go right up to them, within half a metre of them. I didn't take any photographs for fear of waking them up, but the birds were fast asleep. Now, this struck me as being very odd indeed, because I understood that, in fact, sleeping birds keep one eye open. And they open it, or not open all the time, but they open it every few minutes, seconds, that sort of thing, keep an eye out for danger. Now, it's interesting. Sleep is a very interesting thing. That's a connection we have with the birds, I think, because we are daylight animals. We live by our sight, by seeing, and so do the birds, whereas other mammals, for the most part, live mainly by smell. So they are nocturnal. We are diurnal, or daylight creatures. And of course, the trouble with being a daylight creature is that you're extremely vulnerable at night. So we have to retire to a very safe place where nothing will harm us at night and go to sleep. And of course, our cultures, we have fear of ghosts and goblins and vampires and devils and things. The night is a time of terror. And that is psychologically the force that makes us retire. And then when in sleep, of course, sleep is a very strange thing, not fully understood, but that certainly is one of the functions of it, but it isn't as simple as that, because there's two forms of sleep. There's deep sleep and there's light sleep, and in one of these, the light sleep, there we dream all the time. Well, we don't dream all the time, we dream for periods in and out of, and we can look at this by attaching electrodes to the head and looking at the brain waves. And the interesting thing about birds is they have similar sets of brain waves. So they seem to go into two stages, a quiet stage and a deep stage as well. So they probably dream, or something like dreaming. Now, there are theories about that. It's said that dreaming is a matter of, well, one theory is that dreaming is about rearranging, it's filing away the memories of the previous day, the previous time, ordering the mind, getting things, tidying up the mess of our lives, so that when we wake up again, we are a more ordered universe. And it's an interesting thing, that, because sometimes if you have a problem and you fall asleep with a problem, when you wake up in the morning and you find you have a solution, you don't remember.
Yeah, but I don't want a counselling session, Richard. I want to know about the bird sleeping with one eye open or not. You told me that some birds sleep with one eye open. Is that true?
That is true. Yeah, I'll tell you about that. It's a very interesting thing that, for instance, in a group of birds, the eye that's opened periodically tends to be at the fringe of the group looking outwards. There's even a curious thing where mallards have is a typical example of a bird with a fake eyelid that comes down and gives the impression that the eye is open when it is not. And that seems to be a trigger to predators that, oh, I can't attack now, he sees me, sort of thing. So some birds open the eye and close the eye. Now, this is a rather curious invention, but in the depths of the flock, the birds tend not to open their eyes. So it's a very, now there's an interesting theory about that, a very way out theory in a sense. If you take a chicken, and the chicken, if it looks out to its right, sees a world, but if it looks out to its left, out through its left eye, it sees a totally different world. This is strange to us because when we look with both eyes at the same thing. So we're focused on one image, but a bird isn't, some birds with eyes on the sides of their head aren't like that. They see two completely different worlds, one to the right and one to the left. So what is their impression of the world from that? Well, it may even be that there's two individual consciousnesses, in a sense, operating. That one is working away.
Richard, I'm going to have to cut you off there because actually the birds are waking up, literally, and we're going to Ewan McElraith, who's in Scotland, BBC Scotland. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Derek. It's fantastic. Well, I'm actually going to shut up. Just for a sec, have a listen to this. I've got a blackbird in full song right on top of one of Ken's mics, and I've got a song thrush on the other mic, courtesy of Arthur. So I'm just going to let you listen to this.
Glorious, Ewan. Absolutely wonderful. Where exactly are you in Scotland at the moment?
Sorry, say that again, Derek. It's really loud.
Where are you in Scotland at the moment?
Yeah, we're in the northeast of Scotland, about 40 miles north of Aberdeen. We've got a wee stand of Scots pine in front of me. Traditional woodland on the left, kind of mixed hedges around, and the line of beach on the other side is just gorgeous country. It's perfect for birds, and it's going to plan okay so far, because what I was hoping for was to get this, obviously the first dawn chorus in the Celtic fringe, and then about 20 minutes later the rooks are going to kick off. I know you've got rooks coming up as well, but our ones have fledged, but they're not flying yet, so they're bouncing about in the trees demanding to be fed, and it's an absolute wall of noise. And what I was worried about was the rooks were going to trample all over this little, like the wren. You know, once the rooks start, you can't hear anything. So, oh, this is just wonderful.
You and Jim Wilson here, we're very, very jealous. And we always have a tiny little panic, kind of one that we shouldn't be panicking about, when we hear further east the birds starting. And yet here in Birdwatch Ireland, Cuscany Marsh Nature Reserve in the south of Ireland, it's deathly silence at the moment. There is nothing singing.
Well, it's wonderful that the blackbird is you know, it's such a lovely song, but according to superstition, it seduces you with its song, and it takes you over to the dark side and gives you dark thoughts. And St Benedict, apparently, because it's legend has it, the devil can turn itself into the blackbird. And one flew at St Benedict and gave him such evil, lustful thoughts for a beautiful young girl. He ripped all his clothes off and threw himself in a thorn bush to punish himself. And he never had another lecherous thought in his life again. So
that'd do it.
Or would start a passion for something else.
But with the blackbird, it's often the bird we'd expect actually start singing, yes, at the top of the dawn chorus.
And the
sun
big eye.
The big eye, Derek, that's what it is. The birds with the largest eyes have the largest retina, which means they gather the most light. Because when a bird is singing, it's giving away its location to every predator in the neighbourhood. So every cat or hawk or fox knows exactly where it is. So that bird is not confident enough to start singing until there's enough light to enable it to see danger coming. And that's why the blackbird and the song thrush and the robin as well, that's why they are among the first to start singing, at least in this part of the world. It's really fascinating.
We can hear the rooks.
We can, they started.
The rooks are just starting to kick off, but I'm about 8 feet away from this beastie. And they're wonderful. I'm going to chuck in another saint for you. It's one of your saints, St. Kevin down at Glendalough.
Oh, yeah, no,
he was said, he was said to be stretching out his hands to pray to his Lord when a blackbird came down and laid its eggs in his, the palm of his hand. And he stood with his palm erect until the eggs hatched and the birds fledged. Now that's commitment.
What a man.
Yeah, well, you don't actually believe that, you and you.
Well, the story with St. Kevin as well is that it was supposed to be that he also had done something, maybe had improper thoughts about a lady, and this was part of penance for that. I think there may have been a murder involved, not a very saintly thing to do, perhaps. So it's obviously something about blackbirds. This inspires something in people.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Well, that's the joy of the Celtic fringe, isn't it? You can be in touch with these stories that many other countries would ridicule. Yeah, it doesn't have to be true. It'd be a good tale.
But well, if you can't make it interesting, make it up. That's what I always say.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I'll give you another blackbird one. If you put a blackbird's feather under somebody's pillow, they will tell you all their innermost thoughts in the morning. Uh-huh. Yeah, top tip for management.
Uh-huh. Excellent. It's a very impressive sound, isn't it? I mean, if I was a female blackbird, I would be very impressed with this male. He's a loud, strong voice, and that's what he's trying to do. He's advertising. He wants the females to be impressed, and he also wants to intimidate the other males.
We did have a sad one before we came on air. It was a tawny owl, but it was only the twit. There was no taroo. So it was out there looking for a mate, just twitting away.
That's in Europe, that's one of the few cases of a duet between the male and the female. So we were saying a few minutes ago, it's usually just the male that sings. With the tawny owl, the male and the female do this duet. That's something that happens quite a lot in the tropical regions of the world. In the rainforests, you get males and females doing this all the time. In a European context, the swift also does it, although it's not quite so notable a song. It's a screaming sound. But the tawny owl is probably the best example.
Yeah, well, aren't you guys lucky I'm here? Say why.
Why are we looking here, Derek?
Because I will say to you, will you explain what you mean by that? Because the male will do twit and the female does taroo.
Yeah, that's it.
But if you don't say that, people don't
know.
No,
that's it. So it's a duet. So he does the first part and she repeats.
Only the people who knew that.
But of course, we don't have that here in Ireland.
We don't have any.
We don't have any tawny owls. No, we have long-eared owls and we have barn owls and we have occasional short-eared owls as well, but we don't have any tawny owls.
Apparently, they don't like crossing water because we don't have them on the islands either. Or not many on the islands. Yeah, that might be another completely made-up Celtic myth. I don't know, but I'll go with that.
Well, I know that certainly one bird that has made the crossing from Scotland across to Ireland and also from Wales to Ireland is the great spotted woodpecker, which is a bird that is also reputed to not like crossing water. But I think that the population with you guys in Britain got to such a high level that some, just because of the sheer population density, crossed the Irish Sea. And they would have been able to see perhaps from the Mull of Kintyre across to Northern Ireland, and they would have been able to see maybe from Snowdonia National Park across to Wicklow. And they've colonised in the last 15 years or so, and they're spreading now in Ireland. So maybe the tawny owls will be after them.
Maybe.
You know, I'm so relieved that you managed to share this with us.
Well, that's a really terrific sound. So you've got the first birds, it looks like, Ewan, anyway. So it's now 28 minutes past 4 a.m. and Scotland has the first. Did you say exactly where you are in Scotland?
Yes,
we're in northeast of Scotland, 40 miles north of Aberdeen. What I love about this whole programme, this Celtic Dawn Chorus, is nowhere else in the world will you get competitive bird song listening.
Not just the birds.
Guys in Wales are saying, come to me, come to me.
Of course, Ewan, you could be at home in your dining room with a tape recorder setting this up.
So could we.
But we won't cheat. Nobody's cheating.
We can't because RTE News are with us.
That's true.
So
proof that we're actually
standing here.
I did have some recorded on as a backup. When I was up yesterday at 3 in the morning just in case.
Yeah, because even though they will continue to sing, the weather would make the recording not as crisp and clear as it is today.
Will we have a listen?
Yes.
Ewan, you're in charge, but we're going to listen to your birds.
Yeah. Well, what I thought we might do is we get Ken to wheeze through the three mics we've got. We can stick with the blackbird, which is the middle mic, Ken. And you'll probably get another take on it if you take the far away mic. You'll get the other half of that. Oh, bit of robin in the background as well. And if we go to the rook microphone, see if they're up and running yet. We've got a pheasant there. You don't have snakes in Ireland, but the pheasant's responsible for the bulk of snake deaths in Scotland, because pheasants do not like adders, and they'll kill a young one and peck the eyes out of an old one.
Many years ago, I did some work for BBC Bristol, the Natural History Unit, and I made a pilot programme called Mooney Walk. And we spoke to this expert on adders, and he told me at the time the last person to die of an adder snake bite in England died from the injection they give.
The antivenom.
The antivenom, not the actual bite. He had an allergic reaction.
Oh dear.
Shouldn't be laughing at that. It was a long time ago, 30 years ago. There,
apparently sucking it out doesn't work.
I'm sure it doesn't. Is it dark there still, Ewan? Is there a glimmer of light in the sky? What have you got exactly?
It's just coming over the horizon. Of course, it's Beltane, slipping out of spring and into summer. Big celebrations today. With the sun god coming to meet Bel, the earth goddess, and they'll be getting it together to make Beltane.
Or Beltane here in Ireland.
Aye, and the fires and the jumping through the fire and purification. It's an exciting time.
And in Irish Gaelic, Beltane is now the name of the month of May, which we obviously just started. So it all goes back to that Celtic heritage again.
Yeah, it's good to be able to just do the Celtic thing, isn't it?
It's nice, isn't it? Yeah, I think it's really, really good. All of us close cousins talking to each other about the birds, something so important, and the shared heritage. Oh, here, Wren there now, singing away.
Because you're going to get a lot more wrens later on, yeah?
They really are such a ubiquitous bird. And I know in Scotland, the wren is such a hardy species that even on some of the quite remote islands that there are wren populations, even in places like St Kilda, there's a unique subspecies or race of wren there. That's such a tiny bird that each insect can survive somewhere so remote. It's really impressive.
Yeah, but St Kildan wren's bigger than its landlocked cousin. We were out there. They've got the mouse as well, which is bigger too. It's a bit of thrush in the background.
Ewan, I'm not hearing the Scottish accent on those blackbirds. My ear isn't tuned in, but I presume, like, your accent to us is very distinctive, obviously Scottish. But I assume your blackbirds and song thrushes probably have a Scottish lilt to them as well.
Well, absolutely, and certainly there's a lot of work being done on robins. And they get 40 miles away, you'll get a different sound. But as you'll know, the song changes so much. 4 weeks ago, the thrush was just doing the one little phrase, and now it's got about six or seven, and it's developing all the time. It drives you nuts when you try to identify them.
We used to always have a saying when we were out looking for rare American birds in the autumn that if you couldn't identify the bird, it was a great tit.
Yes.
Because of the number of different sounds it can make.
Yeah, but it is the most irritating bird in the world. The rusty wheelbarrow.
That's right.
It always reminds me of a bicycle pump.
And can I tell you, sometimes they do it very quickly.
Yes, they do. They speed
sometimes
up and slow down.
And then sometimes...
And what we know as
well...
We
could sample that and get a hit.
There we go. Let's Eurovision. There we go. But I know that certainly what happens with the great tits as well is they'll copy the songs of their neighbours. So they'll sing a certain song type. One male will sing. The ones around him in the neighbouring territories will copy that. Then someone will shift and then the other ones will copy to match him as well. So obviously we're doing a lot of guesswork here, but that may be a case of he's trying to impress the females and to make sure that he can
compete
each other.
Guys, can we just hold on? Ewan, if you'd bear with us for a moment, Niall and Jim and everybody else, we're going to Northern Ireland and we're going to say hello to David there, who's with Anne-Marie, because I believe you've got a snipe, David.
Absolutely, Derek. We're at Portmore Loch here, which is just in the southeast corner of, just to the southeast of Loch Ness, of course, the largest body of water by area in the British Isles. And this is a more bijou kind of a loch area here, and there's a low-lying mist at the moment. Anne-Marie McDevitt is with me from the RSPB. Anne-Marie, you just heard just a few moments ago the snipe.
Yeah, we get very excited because we heard them chipping earlier, and then we've had a bird drumming, so going up in there and then diving down in the wind, going through its tail feathers, making that beautiful noise.
And why is it doing that?
Oh, well, that's display now, because they breed here on the wet grasslands, and hopefully we're going to be picking up lapwing too in a wee while.
Yeah, they were talking a moment or two ago about birds sleeping with one eye open. I think since we arrived here around 3 o'clock, there's been many birds with both eyes open. I don't want to argue with our Celtic cousins over in Scotland, but there have been terns here making sound all night on the Tern Islands, which are just to our left here. But those snipe, we're going to listen now to a mic which is just down to our left here. We positioned it so that we could hear the lapwing, which is one of the birds which is very popular here at this particular lake. But I'm just wondering, is that mic picking up any of those snipe sounds? Let's have a listen.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, great.
What a fantastic
sound. Yeah, excellent. And you can hear the black-headed gulls on the raft as well. And then...
It's an extraordinary sound, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So you're listening to the live broadcast of the Dawn Chorus, and what we're listening to now is the outside broadcast with our colleagues in BBC Radio Ulster, David Maxwell and Anne-Marie McDevitt. Guys, will you just explain that sound of the snipe, how it's making that sound?
Yeah, well, the snipe is very interesting because this is unlike all the members of the Dawn Chorus that we're likely to hear. They're using their syrinx, or the equivalent of our larynx, the vocal cords. Whereas this bird is using what I would call a mechanical sound. It's what it's doing is it's spreading out its tail feather like a fan, you know, like a fan from Japan or one of those, spreading it out fully, and the very outer feathers end up at right angles to the body, and they're really stiff. And then they climb into the air, and then they just drop to the ground. And it's as they're dropping to the ground, the air is passed over the feathers, and it's making a sound like a goat, actually. Gower on air is the Gaelic or the Irish word for it, Oscuelga. Gower on air or moan on air, and it's because it reminded people of the fact that it sounded a little like a goat or a young goat. And so what we're hearing, and we'll just have another listen now, is the air rushing across the outer tail feathers of the snipe as it plummets towards the ground.
Anne-Marie, it's not the only extraordinary sound. Of course, the lapwing, which is in that general area where we have the mic as well, makes one of the most extraordinary sounds as well. I remember hearing it a couple of years ago at Window and Wildlife, the reserve in Belfast. It's a bit like a shortwave radio, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, loads of kind of clicks and whirs and just very, very odd. I mean, we call it lapwing, but obviously it has got a lot of local names which make reference more to the song. So peewit or peesweep or pilibin, I think, in Irish. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but yeah, it's a fascinating sound. I think it's just a wee bit too early for lapwing. I think the snipe have started first, but I'm sure we'll pick up lapwing.
We can certainly lend a bit of light to other areas of Ireland and the UK, because we've had light here for a little while now, and as it comes up, we've got an orange and blue reflection on that body of water in front of us. As I say, it's a lot smaller than Loch Ney, but it covers something like, I think, 700 acres. Why is it so important to the RSPB?
Well, just really important because of these low-lying wet grasslands are really important for snipe and lapwing, which have undergone really big declines, over 80% across Ireland. It's really important for the fringes here at the edge, in terms of that fen and reed bed as well. We can hear a lot of sedge warblers. We've been here, well, they call through the night, so we've been kind of hearing them as soon as we arrived. So the wet grassland area is really important. The open loch itself for the common terns that nest on the rafts there, and also kind of the open water for populations of things like a pochard and tufted duck and grey-crested grebe. And then we've got this lovely little woodland area, and we've even got a patch of what we call wild bird cover, where we grow seed and let it settle over the winter, and that's really important for seed-eating farmland birds that are in decline as well.
Let's let folk
David
listen
and
to the terns who've been with us
tonight?
All night.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me.
No, we can't see it, Derek, at the moment. The light is coming up, but it's not just good enough for us to see down in that location. We hope to go there a little bit later. I was going to let you listen just to the mic that we have over on the Tern Island. Bella, I wonder, can you turn to that mic that's facing the Tern Island? It's gone quiet there, because it was very, very loud earlier.
Yeah. I mean, most of the noise coming from the black-headed gulls are probably drowning everything else out, and just the sedge warblers, but have we lost it now?
Yeah, I don't think we're hearing it. Maybe it's gone quiet there. Let's hear the woodland behind us here. If we go in the direction, westerly direction, really, basically behind us here, we'll hear if some of those birds are starting to wake up.
You can still hear that snipe. I mean, it's terrific to hear that. The one and only time I ever heard a snipe in the flesh, so to speak, was in Iceland. Jim, I think I was with you.
It
was many years ago. You were up cannon netting.
That's right, Godwits,
which come here. Let's go to BBC Wales now. We'll come back to David and Anne-Marie in Northern Ireland shortly. Let's go to BBC Wales and say good morning to Daniel Jenkins-Jones and Tara Okun. Hello, Daniel.
Bwrdd da iawn, diolch yn fawr iawn, Derek, thank you very much. A chroeso atyn ni fan hyn ar BBC Radio Wales ac yn arbennig i warchodfa natur glwbdiroedd Casnewydd. Welcome to BBC Radio Wales and welcome in particular to a very special location, Newport Wetlands National Nature Reserve. And Tara and I have been liking this kind of game of competitive Celtic bird song listing. So I'm a bit of a fan of the blackbird, I have to be honest with you. So I was quite impressed with that to begin with. I've always thought that for all this kind of Celtic connections with saints, etc., I've always thought the blackbird sounds a little bit like Frank Sinatra, because the phrasing is so brilliant. You hear every single note. He's very laid back. You can almost imagine him singing his song with a cigarette hanging out of his beak. But I'll see your blackbird, and I'll raise you, and a snipe as well, and I'll raise you a bittern. Because Tara and I this morning have already heard a bittern in one of the reed beds around us here at the moment. If we just, before I go over to Tara, can we just listen to the reed beds just in case it's calling at the moment? Well, I think
you've got a cuckoo though.
Cuckoo of the day there.
You've got a cuckoo in the distance. Yeah. And just for the benefit of the listeners, if they hear a boom, boom, boom sound, that will be the bittern. If you hear something faint like that later, I know it's not perfect, but you definitely have a cuckoo there. I'm delighted because I'm a big fan of the cuckoo. But anyway, continue, guys.
Yeah, quite a good description, Tara, I think, isn't it, of the kind of blowing your breath across the top of a milk bottle in the
definitely.
Old days. Yeah. Tara, delighted to have Tara with me here as my co-host today, because Tara used to work here for the RSPB for many, many years. So she knows this reserve like the back of her hand. And you'll know how important that bitten call is, don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So it's been over 200 years since we've had a booming bittern. In fact, last year was the first year that we'd actually had them breeding. So we're very pleased. And in fact, in Wales, the Welsh name for a bittern is Aderyn y Bwn. And we've even got a song called Aderyn y Bwn, which if me and Dan had better voices, we might give you a little rendition, but you'll be thankful that we're not going to give you that this morning.
Aderyn y Bwn o'r ban. I used to sing it when I was a kid many, many years ago. But it's a little bit cold here this morning at Newport Wetlands, but we have got a really kind of a good forecast. At the moment, we've got that brilliant moon that you were commenting on a little bit earlier on. The sun is, well, it's not up yet, obviously, but the light is just beginning to percolate through here today. And hopefully, you know, we're set fair for the entire duration of the programme. So hopefully the birds will perform with us a little bit later on. Now, Tara, for those people who aren't blessed and aren't Welsh, where exactly are we on the map?
Okay, so for those of you, I'm sure some of you will know, be familiar with Wales. I'm sure some of you will have watched the Six Nations. Perhaps we won't say any more about that. but I'm sure you've seen it on the weather map as well. So we are right down in the bottom right-hand corner of Wales, the bit that sort of bulges out. We're right next to, not too far away from England. So that's where we are at the moment, and we're in a beautiful location, and we're listening to the fantastic bird song.
So the wonderful thing about Newport Wetlands, Tara, is the fact it's located so close to where so many people live. It's one of the most densely populated areas of Wales. It's a very heavily urbanised area. It's an old industrial area as well. But we've got the history here as well that goes back a few thousand years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it is a fantastic reserve. It's got so many different habitats. It is absolutely brilliant. And as Dan, you just said, you know, it is in a very urban area. It's not your typical nature reserve. It's not in a bubble in the countryside. We've actually got a power station not too far away from us at the moment. But it's beautiful. And we're situated between the Severn Estuary and the River Usk. And we can look out over the Bristol Channel and we can see Flatholme and Steepholme. And where we are at the moment, we've got a fantastic reed bed. So most of the bird song you can hear at the moment is coming from our reed bed. But we have got a little bit of woodland next to us as well. A bit further over, we've got some fields, we've got some wet meadows. And, you know, we get the waders obviously on the mudflats on the estuary as well. So it is a fantastic reserve.
So on to the important stuff then, Tara, so that we can beat our Celtic cousins. Not that we are a family, as Sister Sledge put it so well. You know, we are one big family here in the Celtic nations, obviously. But what birds are we likely to hear singing and calling this morning?
Well,
that we can trump our
well,
friend?
Obviously, we've already had a bitten, so hopefully we'll be able to pick that up at some point on the mics here. Obviously, the cuckoo,
cuckoo
as well. Yeah, definitely cuckoo, which is fantastic. We were hoping for that one today. We'll definitely get reed warblers and sedge warblers, and perhaps a little bit later on we'll explain the difference between those two when they're singing. Hopefully we'll get what we think of as a Welsh bird, the wren, because they like to practice by rolling their R's, so they do a bit of a trill in their song, so they roll their R's, so we like to think of them as being Welsh. But even louder than the wren, because I know the wren is really loud, probably one of the loudest birds we'd hear would be the Chetty's warbler, and that will really announce itself on air, hopefully. So we should be able to hear that one as well. And obviously we'll get some water birds, so we'll probably get some coots, we may get some mallards, and we might get some distance pheasants hanging about here as well, and we might even pick up the curlews out on the foreshore.
That would be absolutely wonderful. A very, very special bird. And I know a bird that's not doing very well in any of the Celtic countries at the moment. When you welcome us back, we'll tell you a little bit more about the history of the reserve, because it's not 100% natural, shall I put it that way, the Newport Wetlands. They weren't always here. They're only about 20 years old, really. But it's still dark here at the moment, but the anticipation is building. So back over to you, Derek.
Thank you, Tara, and thank you, Daniel, indeed. Chetty's warbler, Niall, isn't it named after a priest?
There's a lot of birds named after
Italian priests.
Yes, there's loads of birds named after Italian priests. We have Father Bonelli as well. He's a warbler and an eagle named after him. We have Chetty, we have Savvy, another warbler named after him. So there's a long tradition of Italian priests.
And don't forget Father Tiramisu. Let's go to the Isle of Man now and say hello to Tim Earle. Hello, Tim.
Hello from the Isle of Man, the Celtic island in the middle of the Irish Sea.
But not forgotten.
No, certainly not forgotten, no. We have a big part to play in the Celtic life. I'm very proud of that, we are.
Well, we're delighted to have you with us this morning. So where exactly are you?
I'm on a hill overlooking the ancient seat of our parliament, Tynwald Hill. To my left is, in the long distance, is a mountain called South Barul. To my right, I'm looking down the central valley at a little town called Peel. Beyond that, I can see half of the Irish Sea, and just coming into sight as the dawn lifts here, I can see the coast of Northern Ireland. So I'm well situated. To my back is the other half of the Irish Sea, and if I were over the top of this hill, I'd be able to see Scotland.
God, if you had longer arms, we could shake hands.
Indeed, we could. The bird I'm hoping to hear this morning is the Celtic crow that's already been mentioned on the programme, the chough. The Isle of Man is probably the second most populous place for choughs in the Celtic world. We have about 120 breeding pairs, and in winter time, that number goes up to about 300 birds around the island. They feed on the insect, invertebrate life that grows in piles of seaweed that are washed up by the currents here in the Irish Sea.
They've got a particular way of feeding, haven't they? They stab their red-blooded bills into the ground, don't they?
They do, Derek. They have this curved beak. They get into the seaweed, they get into the ground. They always associate them with a kind of tussock grass atop of cliffs as well, something that other crows can't do. That gives them the edge in those sort of fringe areas.
It does indeed, and the quite heavily grazed cliff tops. We have a lot of sheep on the island. The heavily grazed cliff tops give them another habitat to have a go at. Whether they're in competition with crows, I don't know. The Isle of Man is absolutely teeming with corvids. We have huge flocks. You've seen murmurations of starlings commonly, but here in the Isle of Man, we get murmurations of jackdaws and rooks in the evening time as they swirl around, getting ready to roost. It is a very, very good island for corvids. We have big population of ravens. In fact, last week I was helping the bird warden of the Calf of Man Bird Observatory ring ravens within 300 or 400 metres of my flat in the south of the island.
And why do you think there are so many corvids on the Isle of Man? What's it all about?
It may well be to do with the farming practices. Maybe the Manx farmers aren't as quite as intensive as other parts of Britain and Europe. I don't know what the answer is, but it's a great delight to see them here. I wondered if it was worth mentioning why birds sing first thing in the morning.
Absolutely,
as it
Tim.
Gets light. My understanding is that they go to bed. Well, no, they don't go to bed. They roost at night with enough energy within their bodies to get them through the coldest, bleakest night possible. Mm-hmm. First thing in the morning, whatever energy is left in them, they then use to sing. The first thing they do is to sing to re-establish their territories that were that they were feeding in the day before. And having then once this re-established their territories, they can then go down and feed later on in the morning. But the first thing they have to do is to say, this is my spot. And that's what's happening around me at the moment. There are robins, blackbirds, song thrushes, jackdaws, all sorts of things. calling away here at the top of the hill.
Well, Tim, we'll come back to you shortly. We want to go to Cornwall. You said you have a relatively healthy population of choughs there on the Isle of Man, and we have, I think it's 800 or 900 breeding pairs here in Ireland. I'm not sure what the figures are in Scotland or Wales, but I know in Cornwall, because I mentioned it earlier, it's not that great. I mean, a breeding pair turned up in 2002 and it's doing a little bit better now. But we're going to say hello to Sam Pitt-Miller, who's a zoology student there in Cornwall. Hello, Sam.
Good morning, Derek. Good morning and welcome to Cornwall. Like you say, I'm underneath the stars on the University of Exeter's Penryn campus, and despite the stars still being out, the birds are starting to sing. I've just had the first few robins starting up. I don't know if you're able to hear them.
We could just hear them. I'm beginning to hear a wood pigeon here, I think, in the background here. Go ahead, Sam. Tell us all about the location there.
So there's a nice set of woods behind me, in which there was a tawny owl defending its territory last night. Up until about half an hour ago, actually. I've got I'm sat in a little orchard at the moment. There's a few apple trees in blossom. The blossom just about appearing now against the sky. A few university buildings in front of me. So a fairly suburban area. We should get some robins and blackbirds, song thrush, dunnocks, robins, things like that this morning. Nothing too exciting. I can't compete with the cuckoos of Wales or anything like that, the snipe of Northern Ireland. But some nice resident species everyone should be familiar with.
Every bird has its place in the chorus, Sam. Everything
does,
is exciting. Tell me about the chough in Cornwall.
So as you've been talking about this morning, quite the bird in Cornwall. I think the Cornish have somewhat claimed it, despite it being such a wide distributing bird. So I think it comes from some of the earlier literature, when a Cornish man named, Richard Carew, mistakenly claimed it to be peculiar to Cornwall in his literature, despite living just a stone's throw from Devon, where the birds have also existed for as long as he's lived. So I'm not sure exactly how that ended up happening, but since then, it appears the Cornish have quite the claim to the chough, as you said, appears on the coat of arms and attached to quite a bit of myth and legend here.
Yeah, alongside a fisherman on one side of the coat of arms. Well, basically, you've got a fisherman, a tin miner, a shield in between them, and on top of the shield, you've got the chough.
Indeed, yes, exactly. And got a bit of Celtic for you this morning. The Cornish for chough is palores, which means digger, which is, of course, referring to that big red bill of the owns, which it uses to dig around in the soft earth to find the little invertebrates that it loves to eat so much. So that's its Cornish name. And quite the attachment to Cornish history as well. And as you say, it was in fact some Irish birds which repopulated Cornwall in the early 2000s, bringing this bird back to Cornwall and giving it its national bird once again.
National bird. Thank you very much indeed. We'll come back to you again later on, Sam Pitt-Miller, who's a first-year zoology student there in Cornwall. We're going to County Clare now, and we're going to say good morning to Aina Nilana. Good morning, Aina.
Gee, a good show, Modern Derek. How are you doing?
Greetings. Very good,
from
a little bit cold.
Clare. Now, this is the most westerly extremity of the Dáil Comhairle, because still here we have that half moon. The place is really bright with moonlight. It's 2 degrees, it's very cold, and I'm here in a woodland, and it's the most wonderful woodland because it's just coming into leaf. There's beech trees and there's birch trees and there's lime trees and there's horse chestnuts, and they're all just beginning to bud and come into leaf. And down on the floor of the woodland, there's loads of bluebells, loads of celandines, lovely anemones, and it's all absolutely just bursting into life. And it was here all winter, sitting there, no leaves, no nothing. You couldn't believe that it would suddenly go into life like it has done. So this is a lovely woodland. It's completely quiet here. The only thing I can hear, which is amusing me, is the odd aeroplane taken off from Shannon. I don't know whether I can hear it all the way to Shannon or not, but it is so quiet that when I do get an aeroplane, it takes ages to disappear again. So one is gone now, so hopefully I won't get the 6 o'clock one or the 5 o'clock one coming in on top of us. And the birds here are taking it easy still, because the sky is still very dark and I can see the stars. I can see the North Star, I can see the Plough, I can see the Belt of Orion. It's absolutely gorgeous. And the birds are beginning, I suppose, to wake up because I'm hearing hooded crows and the noise of the hooded crow, caw, 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 and this rooks as well because there's a rookery here and they give the odd rejoinder to them whenever they hear caw, 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 they go on themselves. But whether, of course, they wouldn't perform now when I'm on air, that would be far too much to expect. But they're here all right and they're wakening up. And later on, I expect to find the usual birds. I was listening earlier on yesterday, I suppose it is now, to the chiff-chaff, which is a migrant bird and it's back here in the woods. And even I can identify that because it's chiff-chaff, chiff-chaff, chiff-chaff. And there's the other one that has two notes is the great tit, of course. And they will be later on in the dawn chorus. And of course, you were all talking about the wren and how it belonged everywhere else. Well, the wren is a good county Clare bird as well, and loads of trills and rolling its R's in a good Clare accent. Not only just in Wales does it roll its R's, it rolls its R's here too. Blackbirds, thrushes, all of the woodland birds that we would expect in gardens and hedgerows are in fine form in this woodland. And if it gets brighter, because we're 20 minutes behind the east coast of Ireland as regards light, and it'll be 20 minutes later before they all burst into song. And of course, I'm keeping my ears peeled for the cuckoo who has been heard in the surrounding areas. So maybe we might get some faint sounds of him later on as he begins to waken up too. Although in some places, I know the cuckoo sounds through the night, but I'm not so lucky as to have him sounding through the night here. He must be having a little lie-in for himself this morning. But it's an absolutely magnificent place here, beautifully still, not a puff of wind. And you can just see everything as if it were poised, waiting for the sky to get brighter, waiting for the sun to rise. But the moon is absolutely fantastic, a big half-yellow moon, and it's gone down a bit in the sky since I arrived here, but it's still throwing its moonlight all over the place. So a wonderful place, Derek, to be in Cundy on Clare.
OK, Aina, we'll come back to you later on. It's just 1 minute past 5 a.m. You're listening to the annual broadcast of the Dawn Chorus on RTE Radio 1, on BBC Radio Ulster, on BBC Wales, on BBC Scotland and across Europe on the EBU satellite. So we want to say hello now to all of our listeners who are joining us in Europe, courtesy of the European Broadcasting Union. Excuse me. I think I just followed a fly.
Flycatcher,
some form of insect at that stage. Anyway, thank you very much indeed for joining us. We want to hear from you. We want to hear the Dawn Chorus where you are. So if you've got WhatsApp on your phone, all you got to do is dial this number, lodge it into your phone, and then send us the Dawn Chorus. It's 00353 87 708 7031. So if you store that number on your WhatsApp, and then when the birds are singing where you are, simply tell us who you are and where you are, record the birds, and then it'll send automatically to RTE. So 00353 87 708 7031. If you want more detail, rte.ie/Mooney is where you get all the detail on how to figure out your WhatsApp to send us in those Dawn Chorus recordings. And hopefully between 6 and 7, when the birds have petered out,